All right, so you know how it is. Whenever you hear about another Salesforce implementation, you kind of think to yourself, like, man, is this going to be one of those?
Yeah.
It seems like there's this like general consensus out there that a lot of these projects don't really go as planned.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we see numbers all the time suggesting that huge percentages of them, like a third or even up to 70% of these implementations, they just don't quite hit the mark.
And it's like, you know, you always hear those stories about like miscommunication or, you know, things getting lost in translation, like those little human errors that end up causing huge headaches down the line.
Absolutely. And it's not always about like a lack of technical expertise either. Sometimes it's just, you know, a lack of understanding of like what the business actually needs. You know, those gaps in understanding that can really throw a wrench in the works.
Right. So like if you're someone who's, you know, maybe facing a Salesforce implementation in the near future, or if you're just someone who's, you know, interested in this whole world of like CRM and how to make these projects actually work, you're definitely in the right place for this deep dive.
Yeah, we're not here to like bombard you with jargon or anything like that. We really want to just kind of extract the key insights from some really interesting material we've been going through.
Exactly. And the material we've been looking at today focuses on this concept of a design agent, and it's really offering a kind of fresh perspective on how to approach these Salesforce implementations in a way that's like structured and, well, you know, hopefully leads to more success stories than those, you know, kind of scary statistics we were talking about earlier.
Yeah, and the design agent, it's almost like having this AI-powered partner along for the ride with you.
Yeah, like a smart guide through the whole process.
Exactly. And what's really interesting is how it breaks down the entire implementation into these really logical stages, like steps you can follow.
Right.
And based on what we've seen, it's really designed to kind of cut through the noise and help you really focus on what matters.
Yeah, like getting to those key insights without having to wade through, you know, mountains of documentation or anything like that.
Exactly. And there are several key areas that we're going to delve into today based on this material. And the first one that really stood out to us was this idea of the project brief. And the project brief is all about, you know, making sure that everyone is on the same page from the very beginning. Right? Understanding the scope, the objectives, like setting the stage for the whole project.
Yeah, it's like that, you know, before you even start building anything or writing any code, you got to make sure that you have that solid foundation. And the project brief seems to be like that crucial first step, you know, that sets the compass for the whole journey.
Exactly. It's about laying the groundwork and making sure that everyone understands what they're getting into.
Right. And within that project brief, one of the most important sections really focuses on understanding about the customer, because, you know, at the end of the day, it's not just about implementing Salesforce. It's about implementing Salesforce in a way that actually works for that specific business.
Oh, yeah. It has to be tailored to their needs.
Exactly. Like a custom fit, you know.
Right.
So that means really understanding things like their industry and business model. Like, are they, you know, a subscription-based service? Are they doing direct sales? Like, how does their specific industry play into their needs? Because what works for one company might be completely wrong for another.
And it goes beyond just the industry, too. You have to look at their existing systems. Like, what tools are they already using? What are the pain points they're experiencing?
Right. It's like, you can't just assume that Salesforce is going to be this magic bullet that fixes everything. You got to understand where they're coming from. Like, what are the specific things that they're struggling with that Salesforce can actually help them with?
Yeah, and identifying those pain points, that's like finding the pressure points where Salesforce can have the biggest impact.
Right, and then, you know, once you understand the pain point, it's all about defining those key objectives. Like, what are they actually hoping to achieve with this implementation? Is it to automate certain processes? Is it to, you know, get a better handle on their customer data? Is it to streamline their sales process? Like, what are the big picture goals that they're trying to accomplish?
Those objectives, they act like your guiding stars throughout the whole implementation.
And it's interesting because in the material we were looking at, we actually came across this quote from Richard Socher, who was the former chief scientist at Salesforce, and he said, AI is a complex field, and I am the first to say that we computer scientists have not progressed as far as many people believe.
That's an interesting point.
Yeah, it kind of caught me off guard a little bit, but I think it's a good reminder that, you know, even with all this talk about AI and automation, it's still crucial to have that deep understanding of the business needs and not just rely on technology to solve everything.
Technology is a tool.
Exactly.
You got to use it strategically, and the project brief helps you do that. And then the next piece of this puzzle is the project scope.
Yes. Scope creak, the project manager's worst nightmare.
Pretty much. And this is where we really draw the line in the sand and say, okay, this is what we're doing, this is what we're not doing.
Right, because if you don't define that scope clearly up front, you're just asking for trouble. Like, you know, budget overruns, missed deadlines, the whole nine yards.
Exactly. And so when we talk about project scope in the context of a Salesforce implementation, what are we typically looking at?
Well, You know, the materials outline several common elements that tend to fall within that scope. And the first one is CRM customization, which is basically, you know, tailoring Salesforce to the specific needs of the business, like, you know, their sales processes, their marketing workflows, their customer service operations.
So it's not just like a plug and play kind of thing. You got to configure it to make it work for them.
Right. And then there's data migration, which is, you know, the process of carefully moving all of their existing customer data and, you know, any other relevant data into Salesforce.
Which could be a pretty big undertaking depending on how much data they have and where it's all coming from.
Exactly. And then there's automation and workflows, which is, you know, one of the big selling points of Salesforce, right? Like setting up all those automated processes to save time and reduce manual effort.
Like sending out those follow-up emails or updating lead statuses.
Exactly. All those things that, you know, people used to do manually that can now be handled by the system.
Huge time saver.
Huge. And then, of course, there's integrations because very rarely does Salesforce exist in a vacuum, right? It needs to connect with other systems that the business is using, whether it's their accounting software or their marketing platform or their customer support system.
Right. Got to make all those pieces talk to each other.
And then finally, there's user roles and permissions, which is, you know, all about setting up who can access what data and what functionalities within Salesforce.
Which is super important for security and compliance reasons, right?
Absolutely. So when you're defining the scope, it's not enough to just say, yeah, we're going to do integrations. You got to be super specific, like which systems are we integrating? What data are we migrating? Which parts of the CRM are we customizing?
Yeah, that level of detail up front is what prevents those nasty surprises down the road.
Exactly. And then once you have the scope locked down, the next section in the project brief is all about those expected outcomes.
Ah, yes. Moving beyond the what and focusing on the why.
Exactly. Like, what are the tangible results that we're hoping to achieve with this implementation? What are the key benefits that Salesforce is going to bring to the table?
So we're not just talking about features and functionalities. We're talking about actual business outcomes.
Precisely. And the material we were looking at highlighted several common expected outcomes. And the first one was improved process efficiency, which is, you know, all about streamlining those workflows, getting rid of bottlenecks, eliminating unnecessary steps, making things just run smoother overall.
Making things more efficient.
Exactly. And then there's enhanced data visibility because, you know, one of the big promises of Salesforce is that single unified view of your customer data so you can make better decisions. You know, you can personalize your interactions. You can just really understand your customers better.
It's all about getting that 360 degree view of the customer.
Exactly. And then, of course, there's faster sales cycles, which, you know, for a lot of businesses is like the holy grail, right? Like, how do we move those leads through the pipeline quicker? How do we close deals faster?
Salesforce can definitely help with that.
And then there's improved customer experience, because at the end of the day, you know, happy customers are loyal customers, and Salesforce can help you deliver those personalized and, you know, efficient interactions that really make people feel valued.
So it's not just about making the business run better, it's about making the customer experience better.
Exactly. And then finally, there's scalability, because, you know, a good Salesforce implementation should be able to grow with the business.
Right. It shouldn't be something that you outgrow in a year or two.
So these are all like those measurable outcomes that, you know, really justify the investment in Salesforce.
Yeah, it's not just about having shiny new software. It's about seeing those real world results.
Right. And then to kind of balance things out, the project brief also includes a section on potential project challenges because, you know, let's be realistic, not every project is going to go perfectly smoothly.
Yeah, it's better to anticipate those hurdles than to be blindsided by them.
Exactly. And so the materials highlight several common challenges that organizations tend to face during these implementations. And the first one is data migration complexity.
Because moving data from one system to another is never as simple as it sounds.
Right. And then there's user adoption resistance, which is a huge one. You know, you can have the best system in the world, but if people aren't using it, it's not going to do any good.
So getting everyone on board and trained up, that's crucial.
And then there are those integration roadblocks that can pop up when you're trying to connect all those different systems, because sometimes those systems just don't want to play nicely together.
Yeah, got to make sure that all the pieces fit.
And then there are customization constraints because, you know, Salesforce is incredibly powerful, but it's not infinitely customizable. So sometimes you might run into limitations based on what the platform can actually do.
Right. You can't always bend it to your will.
And then, of course, there's regulatory compliance because, you know, depending on your industry, you might have to adhere to certain regulations and data privacy laws.
Yeah, you got to make sure you're playing by the rules.
So it's like you're doing a risk assessment before you even start the project.
Being proactive.
Exactly. And that leads us to the out of scope section, which I think is just as important as defining what is included.
It's all about setting boundaries.
Right. Because just as important as it is to say this is what we're doing, you also got to be clear about this is what we're not doing.
It's about managing expectations and preventing that scope creep from spiraling out of control.
Exactly. Exactly. So what are some examples of things that might fall into that out-of-scope category?
Well, the material suggested things like advanced AI features, so maybe those super sophisticated AI capabilities that could be added later on but aren't part of the initial implementation.
Right. So like start with the basics and then build from there.
Exactly. And then things like custom mobile app development. So maybe, building a completely bespoke mobile app is something that could be considered down the line, but isn't within the scope of this first phase.
Right. And then enterprise-level integrations. Like, if you're dealing with a really complex IT landscape with tons of legacy systems, maybe you tackle those integrations in stages rather than trying to do everything all at once.
Break it down into manageable chunks.
Exactly. And then there's also this idea of, favoring configuration over expensive custom code development, at least in the initial stages, because the more custom code you write, the more complex and potentially expensive the project becomes.
Of keep it simple to start.
Right. So it's all about setting those realistic boundaries and, taking a phased approach.
Exactly. And so once we have that solid foundation with the project brief, the next phase in this design agent methodology is the design section.
So this is where we start to take those high-level requirements and translate them into an actual solution.
Exactly. And this is where the AI capabilities of the design agent really start to shine.
AI-powered design, that sounds pretty futuristic.
It is, and it's incredibly helpful because it takes a lot of the manual effort out of the design process.
So how does that actually work?
Well, the design section provides you with a central solution workspace, and this is like a collaborative environment where the project team can, manage all the requirements and start to build out the solution in a structured way.
So it's like a digital whiteboard where everyone can collaborate.
Yeah, and the workspace is organized using theme-based organization. So you can group related items under these broad themes and then break those themes down into more specific epochs.
So it's like creating a hierarchy of information.
Exactly. And within those themes and epochs, you can manage both functional requirements, which are, what the system needs to do,
Right.
and non-functional requirements, which are, more about how the system needs to perform things like performance, security, scalability.
So it's not just about what it does, but how well it does it.
Precisely. And the AI plays a key role here because it uses AI-powered structuring to intelligently organize all of those user stories and other design elements.
So it's like the AI is helping you put the pieces together in a logical way.
Yeah, it can save a ton of time and effort and help you avoid potential conflicts or dependencies down the line.
That's pretty impressive. And so there are different ways to visualize this information, right? I remember the material mentioning something called a workspace view.
Yeah, the workspace view gives you that high-level overview of the project. So you can see all the themes, the epics, the features, how everything is connected.
So it's like a visual map of the project.
Exactly. And it makes it really easy for everyone to understand the big picture and how all the different parts fit together.
That's super helpful. And then what about getting into the more specific details of like what the system actually needs to do? That's where the requirements view comes in, right?
You got it. The requirements view is where you document all those functional and non-functional requirements. So, for example, a functional requirement might be something like, as a sales manager, I need to be able to generate a report that shows all the leads created in the last month.
Okay, so that's like a very specific action that the system needs to be able to perform.
Right. And a non-functional requirement might be something like, the system must respond to user actions in under 3 seconds.
So that's more about performance and usability.
Exactly. And the requirements view ensures that both the what and the how are clearly documented.
Makes sense. And then for teams that are using agile methodologies, there's a dedicated user stories view, right?
Absolutely. The user stories view is all about managing the implementation in those smaller iterative chunks and really focusing on the user's perspective.
So this is where those user stories that we talked about earlier come into play.
Exactly. You can create, modify, prioritize user stories in this view, and you can also track their status. So, is it to do, in progress, completed?
So everyone knows where things stand.
And for teams that use Jira, there's also a seamless Jira integration, so you can connect your user stories to your development tasks.
So it keeps everything connected and organized.
Exactly. And then the next piece of the puzzle is the solution view. And this is where we start to bridge the gap between those business requirements and the actual technical implementation.
So this is where things start to get a little more technical.
It can be, but the solution view actually makes it easier to understand because it breaks down the solution into two levels. You have high-level solutions, which are like the big picture overview,
Okay.
and then you have low-level solutions, which are the nitty-gritty details.
So high level is like the blueprint and low level is like the construction plans.
Perfect analogy. And the really cool thing here is that the AI can automatically generate those low-level solutions based on the high-level requirements.
Wow, so the AI is actually doing some of the design work.
It is, and it does a really good job because it ensures that the technical implementation is aligned with the business logic.
That's huge because that's often where things can go wrong, right? Like miscommunication between the business side and the technical side.
Exactly, and the AI helps to bridge that gap and then to keep all of your development tasks organized. there's a section for user stories and backlog.
So this is where all those user stories live and get prioritized and assigned to sprints and all that.
Exactly. It allows for themed story organization, so you can keep all the related user stories together.
Okay.
And you could do prioritization and effort estimation, so you know which stories are the most important and how long they're going to take.
So you can allocate your resources effectively.
Right. And you can also use this view for release planning, so you can map out your sprints and releases and make sure that everything is on track.
So it's a really comprehensive system for managing the entire development process.
It is. And then to circle back to the AI's role in this whole thing, the solution design generation capability is really where it shines.
Tell me more about that.
So the AI can take all the project scope and the requirements that you've defined, and it can automatically generate those technical design specifications.
Wow.
So things like, you know, configurations, metadata definitions, workflow designs, all that stuff can be handled by the AI.
That's incredible, because that's usually a very manual and time-consuming process.
It is, and it's also prone to errors. So by automating it, you're not only saving time, but you're also improving accuracy.
That makes a lot of sense. And so we've talked about the planning, the designing, the development, but there's one more crucial step that we need to cover, and that's the discover section.
Ah, yes. This is where we make sure that we're not building on a foundation of sand.
Right, like garbage in, garbage out.
Exactly. The discover section is all about verifying the quality and the completeness of the information that we've gathered so far.
Because if you start with bad information, you're going to end up with a bad solution.
That's the idea. And the discover section uses a project input quality indicator to assess how good that information is.
So it's like a scorecard for your project inputs.
Yeah, it gives you a score from 0 to 100 based on how detailed and complete your requirements and objectives are.
So the higher the score, the better.
And the AI actually analyzes those inputs, and it flags any areas that are missing information or that are unclear or ambiguous.
So it's like having an extra set of eyes scrutinizing everything.
And if the score falls below a certain threshold, the system highlights those project input gaps, and it gives you a list of pending insights, which are basically questions that need to be answered.
So it's like it's prompting you to go back and fill in the blanks.
Exactly. And it also gives you a visual representation of, you know, what's been answered, what's still pending, so you can easily see where the gaps are.
That's really helpful. And I remember the material even included an example of what those questions might look like.
Yeah, it showed how the system would present those queries in a clear and concise way.
And it's interesting because there was another quote in the material, this time from Hugo Freitz, who's the general manager of Salesforce Mexico. And he said, "Identifying and addressing business challenges through AI presents immense opportunities for innovation, enhancing data analysis and customer satisfaction."
Yeah, that's a good point.
And I think it really speaks to the power of using AI to make sure that we have a solid understanding of the business needs before we start building anything.
Because if you don't understand the problem, you can't solve it.
Exactly. And so the discover section is basically that last check to make sure that we're not missing anything crucial before we move on to the actual implementation.
It's all about minimizing risk and preventing costly rework later on.
And so once we've planned, designed, verified the quality of our inputs, what's next?
Well, the next couple of sections focus on streamlining some of the more operational aspects of the implementation. And the first one is Document AI.
Document AI. So this is all about managing all the documentation that comes with a project like this.
Exactly, because Salesforce implementations, they generate a lot of paperwork.
They do.
And Document AI provides a central file manager where you can store all those documents securely and access them easily.
So it's like a digital filing cabinet.
But it's more than just storage. The AI can actually extract key information from those documents automatically.
Oh, wow. So you don't have to manually go through and, you know, highlight things and copy and paste and all that.
Nope. The AI does it for you, and it can save you a ton of time.
That's amazing. And then there's also search and tagging, so you can easily find the information you need.
Using keywords and categories, yeah.
And it even has a chat-based interaction feature, so you can ask questions and get instant answers.
Like having a virtual assistant for your documents.
So it's not just about storing the information, it's about making that information accessible and usable.
Exactly. And then the final piece of the puzzle is metadata. And now this might sound a little technical, but it's actually pretty straightforward. Think of metadata as like the DNA of your Salesforce organization. It's all the underlying information about your objects, your fields, your workflows, all those customizations that make your Salesforce instance unique.
Okay, so it's like the blueprint of the system.
Exactly. And the metadata section of the design agent is all about making sure that metadata is managed efficiently.
And how does it do that?
Well, first it establishes a secure connection to your Salesforce organization.
Okay.
And then it performs metadata extraction. So it pulls all that key configuration information automatically.
So it's like it's reading the DNA of your Salesforce instance.
And then it uses that information to provide automated insights so it can help you streamline the design and the customization process.
So it's like it's giving you recommendations based on what it's learned about your Salesforce org.
Exactly. And by automating all of this, you're reducing manual effort, you're minimizing errors, and you're speeding up the whole implementation process.
It sounds like a really powerful tool, and so we've covered a lot of ground today. It's Design Agent. It really does seem like a comprehensive and well-thought-out approach to Salesforce implementations.
It is. It's all about bringing structure and clarity and efficiency to a process that can be notoriously complex and challenging.
And you know, those statistics that we talked about at the beginning about the high failure rates of these projects, it really makes you think about how a tool like this could potentially change the game.
Absolutely. And I think the key takeaway here is that by focusing on those fundamentals like clear communication, thorough planning, and, you know, leveraging the power of AI, we can really increase the chances of success for these Salesforce implementations.
And it's exciting to think about what the future holds as AI continues to evolve and, you know, these tools become even more sophisticated.
Yeah, like what new levels of automation and efficiency might we see down the line?
It's a really interesting time to be in this space, that's for sure.
Absolutely.
Well, this has been a fantastic deep dive into the world of Salesforce implementations and the Design Agent.
Thanks for having me.
It's been a pleasure. And for our listeners out there, if you're interested in learning more about the Design Agent and the other tools that GetGenerative.ai offers, be sure to check out the links in the show notes.
And if you're planning a Salesforce implementation yourself, I highly recommend you take a look at this approach.
It could save you a lot of headaches down the road.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, that's all the time we have for today's deep dive. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next time.
See ya.